Welcome to what is the first episode of hopefully many Macross podcasts, and we're dubbing it Macross Speaker Podcast. And with me here today, well, hang on, introduce myself first. This is Gwyn Campbell, known as Torchiro, over on the Macross World Forums. With me on my right,
Adrian Lozano, formerly Save Robotech, now known as Save on the Macross World Forums.
Or Indiana Macross.
Indiana Macross, that was on there for a little bit, yes, but Save, just call me Save.
You called the dog Indiana Macross.
Oh, that's...
My name's Renato. My name's Renato.
Realist.
It's also my name on the forums.
I'm Peter. Well, to disappoint you, I'm not on the forum yet. I'm a friend of, like, Adrian's, and just got invited, so excuse if I, you know,
but
can't catch up with
you
guys.
Well, I mean, we're all here because we've got something in common. I hope we do, or else this is going to be a bust.
We're all foreigners in Japan.
Speak for yourself. No, because we've all seen the second Macross Frontier movie, Sayonara no Tsubasa. Now, how do we want to... Let's standardize the translation of this.
Robotech the Movie 2.
Shadow Chronicles 2?
No. The retold story.
Well, there's been back and forth whether we call it The Wings of Goodbye or The Wings of Farewell. I know you're...
I'm all for The Wings of Farewell because of the ending of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Wings of Goodbye just sounds like some stupid guy translated it just because sayonara means goodbye.
Yeah, I can agree with that. What do you guys think? Renato, you're like the educational kind of person.
Farewell sounds good, right. I guess.
Alright, so Wings of Farewell, and we've all seen it. How many times have you guys seen it?
Seen it twice.
I'm up four times.
Once. Is that really shameful?
We'll move you down to the end of the tape.
Sorry, once.
Cool. And, well, of course,
I have
movies.
Two more tickets.
Two more tickets?
Really?
Three tickets, you know, for, like, 1,300 yen.
Oh, cool.
You know what we can do after the
1,300? I thought they were 1,400.
No,
pre-orders are 1,300.
Did you get it with the poster?
No.
Oh,
normal tickets.
It's sold out with the poster.
Well, now we know what we're doing after the podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, the new movie's out, and the other idea behind this is to, well, we're at the tail end of a Macross boom, you know, at the moment. I don't think anyone would, you know, argue with that. The past few years have been amazing in terms of Macross events. So we're hoping to get something going kind of semi-regular, or whenever the fancy strikes us, to, you know, do a show and just chat about what's going on. Now, this is supposedly a podcast. Someone's decided to film it. Don't blame me for that. Because, you know, I'm well into these, so enough said. But, gentlemen, let's start off. Look, before we talk about the movie, I want to know about everyone's history with Macross, the short version. I'm going to start with Peter.
Oh, okay. First came along with Macross with Robotech.
Stage fright, go away, this is my big day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was living in Korea, like, in the 80s, like, and they had... like, broadcast for American Forces Korea Network, something called AFKN, and they had American broadcasts there, and, you know, they show a lot of animes, something like Transor Z, Ghetto Robo, and, of course, Robotech, so I, you know, just got hooked.
So they just play that in English? Did they have, like, subtitles or something?
No, it was for American Forces.
So they just played English as was, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah, that was my first encounter.
Exposure.
Yeah, with Macross. Uh-huh. Had like toys. They had the Toynami version, transforming BF fighter.
Oh.
And that was my first Robotech Macross toy. Sorry, excuse me.
The Toynami one was in 2000 though.
The classic one with the...
the first masterpiece one or the posable plastic ones?
The Transformer one with the little metal parts.
Back in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
It's a Takatoku.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, the Myriad...
Graham's Chunky Monkey. Right?
Chunky Monkey, right.
Yeah, and then...
Yeah, everyone had that.
Yeah, and then after that I came across the first movie, Love You Remember.
Mm-hmm.
I had a dub from the Laserdisc, and you know, I was like just amazed because I was a Gundam fan. I am a Gundam fan still, but
that's good.
I saw Macross and I found what, you know, what I wanted in Gundam, but they didn't have. That was all in Macross.
Fun.
Ooh.
I'm sorry.
It was fun. You know, Gundam had all these, like, heavy, you know, theme and, like, you know, drama stuff, and then, and Macross had, like, you know, like,
singing,
singing, dancing,
cross-dressing,
kissing.
Not yet, not yet.
Hey, started with Robotech.
Okay, with fighter planes, like, doing, like, little crazy, like, dog fights.
Right,
like that.
Right.
Yeah, that really, you know, was a difference. And that's why I like those two in a very different way.
Yeah. You want to jump in next?
Okay. My first experience with Macross was in Southern California, a small hobby shop in San Bernardino called Harper's Hobbies was importing model kits from Japan, and they had like Yamato model kits, and they eventually got in Macross kits, and then when the Takutoku toys came out, they got the toys, and I just went nuts. But I didn't understand why these robots had pilots. It's just, the artwork was cool at the time, but there were, I think it was like the trainer for Do You Remember Love was like 4,005, well, I'm sorry, in U.S. dollars it was about $45.
$4,000
yeah, at the time, and around the time of summer of 84 when they got imported, they were about
$5,000?
They were about $50. And at that time, I couldn't afford it because I was just some teenager. And passed on them, and I got the cheap EMI model kits or whoever was making them at the time. And then about a year and a half later, Robotech got aired on public television.
Right.
And it was the start of a new era for me. So before that, I was watching like Gigantor, Kim of the White Lion, Yamato, and I like the character style and the mechanical design, but none of the stories never made sense. So I just followed it for an artistic point of view. But the Robotech story for Macross just was like slingshotted me into wanting to get into more serious animation. And, of course, I love the character design, Mikimoto's character design and stuff. And mechanical design, for me, wasn't actually the big deal. It was more the character design. And then about a year and a half after that, after seeing the entire Robotech series, I went to a sci-fi con. And somebody had the Laserdisc for Do You Remember Love? And
oh boy.
I was more like, what? How? Fokker's alive? Ben Dixon's alive?
I'm so hungry, I may order another one.
Why do they call him Kagezaki? So, and then they killed him again, and then I was distraught, and then just kept going, had this pilgrimage, found out more about it, started going to, like, Anime Con, and then that turned into Anime Expo, and I learned more about the authentic Macross, and then I kind of never went back.
Can I ask a question? When you said you were looking at these model kits and toys and things, and you said you didn't understand why there were pilots in there, was it because of Transformers? Because the Transformers don't have pilots?
Yeah, I would say mostly because Transformers at the time, because there was no pilot in Transformer, unless you bought the Diclone or the Microman that came with the pilots. And I didn't understand why those cheap bootlegs of the real Transformers.
I'm going to need that later.
Because I thought those were actually the bootlegs of Transformers.
I thought that too.
So, and yeah, I didn't understand this whole why are these robots being piloted or they have these pilots. But
No.
In the long run, piloted robots are better than sentient being robots. Especially if they're made by Michael Bay.
Alright, on that note,
that's another point.
Since I hate Michael Bay, I'll jump in next. I grew up with Robotech.
That sure is a big tuna fish.
In the mid-late 80s, I suppose, as most of us did. It was on really early on Saturday mornings in Sydney, where I'm from. Like 6:30, 7 in the morning on Saturday. Who the hell wakes up at that time? So it was this show I always caught like the second half of if I tried. And never really made sense because I'd never seen an episode from the beginning. And eventually they replayed it at a more reasonable time and I watched it and I really liked it. And we didn't really have any of the toys or the model kits. I wasn't particularly looking for them. As a kid, I didn't really have a local hobby shop as such, like a model shop. But the local toy shops had nothing. Yeah. the only people I knew with toys were the friends from, like, Hong Kong, who would have the Japanese imports sent to them in Australia. And I went to a friend's place, and he showed me a really bad VHS, probably Hong Kong bootleg of Do You Remember Love, which I immediately borrowed off him and took home, only to realize I had a PAL-only VHS player, and it didn't work. I think my love for the series kind of went dormant until Macross Plus came out, and that kind of rekindled it. Yeah. From the early 90s, I was into the whole anime wave, whatever number that was, when Akira came out, Fist of the North Star came out.
Oh, the fall of... I'm sorry.
I didn't say Urotsuka Dorji. I'm getting to that. Venus Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went back and rewatched Bubblegum Crisis. So, but it all got rekindled with Macross Plus, and it was right around the time the internet was coming into its own, so I could look for information on where this had all come from and whatnot. I really enjoyed it since Robotech. I mean, I've gone back and rewatched Robotech. It is difficult once you watch the original Macross. I will admit that. But that's where my roots are. I don't detest it. I think you can appreciate both. It's just easier to do so with a strong dose of nostalgia.
Yeah, and pre-Sentinels animation.
Yeah, my mother skipped out of my aunt's birthday to watch the Sentinels.
Oh, God.
They were playing on TV. She's like, oh, my God, Rick's getting married. And she skipped out of her own sister's...
So I don't know. I do have. Do we all have an appreciation for the original 85 episodes of Robotech? I do.
I never saw the 85. I just turned off after the last Macross episode aired.
What, you knew you were psychic? Like, you never watched? Anything else?
Oh, I did watch it by accident. Yeah. I mean, after I went back to. Oh, yeah, maybe I should do my.
Yeah,
my thing just to give you a context, right? Okay, so I was actually born in Peru and raised there until I was 7 years old, which is where I first learned about Robotech. And I had the toy of Jetfire, who was the Transformer. You know, they recolored him.
He
was the VF1S. And I was always confused as to why it's a different color in a different show, and then it doesn't look like the toy when you actually watch Transformers. So I found out about that back history quite a while later. But even at that point, I knew that there was something going on, that they were trying to hide something, and they were trying to pull the wool over my eyes somehow. That there was Japanese stuff. Because... like what you were saying, like the Transor C and all these things, they were rebranded for the American market, and they tried to hide all the Japanese origins. When I was watching TV in Peru, I think only Robotech was the only Japanese animation that actually did try to change everything. I don't remember watching Star Blazers, for example, and I remember watching Mazinger Z or Zeddo. As Mazinger. And I remember watching Tetsujin Niju Hachigo, which had the English logo, Iron Man 20. Yeah. The 80s version.
The 80s version, right?
It wasn't Gigantor.
Yeah.
It was... they had translated it directly to Spanish.
Yeah.
And many other... Even the Super Sentai shows, which they still even show right now, they don't even bother changing the kanji at the end. You know, they still got Japanese endings. And Candy, they still show, even though it's illegal to show in this country right now. So everyone was aware that these round-eyed cartoons were coming from a country called Japan.
It's racist.
So, is it, though? So it was just one of many cartoons that I used to watch at the time, Robotech.
Okay.
I didn't know that the original name was Macross, I just knew it as Robotech. And I did realize that halfway through they changed, but I never watched them in order. So I never knew the whole overarching story. I just knew that there were Valkyries in one portion of Robotech, then there wasn't, just the same as there were Lions in one portion of Voltron, and then there wasn't. Oh, sorry, yeah, Voltron was another one of those Americanized ones that I did recognize.
You mean the superior vehicle Voltron, right?
Oh,
okay.
Lion Force Forever.
And I'll form the head!
So...
I moved to the UK after 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that no one watches Japanese cartoons. I wasn't the only one. And Transformers is so passe. But eventually, during the 90s, like what you said with Akira and Macross Plus and all these things, I recognized Macross Plus. I never saw it was Kudoujin, actually. I recognized Macros Plus as some kind of sequel to Robotech, and I remember speaking to a friend of mine at the time, and they said, yeah, it's not called Robotech anymore, it's called Macros. They're all going back to the original. And I'm like, oh, hey, oh, great. So I tried to watch Robotech from the beginning, and it didn't make any sense because Rick and narrator, you guys said you didn't follow the story of Robotech. I don't know how you couldn't. The narrator explaining everything. Rick walked into a room and then he turned to his right. He didn't know how close he would come to death.
I tried, but it wasn't until I got older and I went and rented them because, you know, I'd wake up halfway through an episode every Saturday morning.
Well, maybe it's because it's different for me, because in the States, it was aired. They showed that Codename Robotech on a Friday, which basically the first four episodes condensed into a movie. Then the following week, they were aired every day, Monday through Friday. So I sat and watched them all in order until all three sagas went through, and then it went to the what I thought was going on to the fourth saga, and to be continued was return with us to the original cast of blah blah blah, and just start over again. So I mean, yeah, I could follow it because I raced home every day from school, and so did half the school to watch that show. I mean, people wouldn't even watch it at somebody else's house. Everyone had to watch it in their own house and then talk about it at school the next day.
That and Star Blazers.
Yeah, because I'd be like, you want to watch it in my house? And they'd be like, no, no, I'll watch it at home. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
We only talked about Transformers. There's a new leader now. He's called Radmus.
Oh, God.
Oh, what?
First Prime, then Ultra Magnus, and now you. It's a pity you Autobots die so easily.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on then.
Okay.
Before talking about the Wings of Farewell, I think we have to put on the table what everyone thought of the first movie.
The
you do that again. You're sculling a can. You're gonna jet a can, okay?
What's the Japanese title?
Itsuari no Utahime. The false. Well, I've heard it called the false songstress. I've also heard it called the false diva.
I call it the false movie.
But okay, look, since everyone's this, I've got this air of negativity coming around me. I'm going to jump in first. Give me that. I enjoyed the first movie for what it was. It had a heck of a lot of good music. I thought the retouched animation was nice. I thought the new battle scenes were nice. The whole end scene of the first movie I loved, with the rather strange looking boat stage, which, you know, we've got all these people who went to Cheryl's first concert, which got screwed up. So we're going to hold another concert for them. So let's put the stage so far out in the middle of a bay that they cannot see her at all.
It was supposed to be like Disney's Fantasmic.
And that sucks as well.
I know it sucks, but it was
It reminded me of Future of Scope in France. Has anybody heard of it?
No.
Okay, all right.
What's French?
Maybe it's the same as Fantasmic.
I'll put it this way. I enjoyed it. They had new voice work in it. The battle scenes were really good, but it definitely came across as a bit of a compilation movie. It was a compilation movie, but you know, much like you get in, who's done, like, well, Turn A Gundam did it. Recently they redid, you know, the Zeta Gundam ones. You get a lot more out of it, like basic understanding, if you've watched the series. It was obviously aimed at people who've watched the series. I had a few friends criticize it, saying that, you know, well, if you hadn't watched the original series, you wouldn't know what was going on or who this character was. But it's not made for new people. Granted, I've seen Kawamori say, like at an interview, that it's to bring new fans into the series, but it's not. Everyone who went to the cinema to see the first one were fans of the original.
Yeah, but then everyone who went to the cinema to watch that got ripped off because everybody's seen it.
But we knew going into it, it was going to be...
I know that. Yeah, that's true.
All right, you go next then.
Yeah.
Okay, I enjoyed the new take on the opening battle, which went on for a bit longer. And I enjoyed the end battle, which was a lot more intense than most of the TV show stuff. But then the stuff in between, even the title, why is it called The False Songstress? It's because she's revealed to be a spy. Oh, you're a spy. But that whole scene of being a spy is brought up and resolved in 5 minutes. Ozma's in the car with Alto in the interminable tunnel scene.
No, it's actually... It's mentioned in the second movie.
I know it's mentioned in the second movie. I'll go into that later. But really, it's just cleared up. You're a spy! And then she says, I'm not.
No,
that's... Well, you're trying to transform into...
Transform it, yeah. Anyway, yeah.
It won't... It might snap.
Sweet.
Because
keep going.
Stiff joints. like I'm feeling right now. Ozma in the car says to Alto, she's a spy, and Alto goes, oh, is she? And then the next scene, the very next scene, is Alto going up into Griffith Park, right? And points to Cheryl, you're a spy! And Cheryl says, no, I'm not! And then he's like, oh, shit.
She was chasing...
And that's it! That is the reason for the movie is called... Oh, no. It's the fourth movie.
Well, there's nobody under 25 going to listen to this podcast.
Besides which
my brother...
We have
is 11.
Oh,
he
I
watches
forgot.
The TV show.
The one you won't even let watch Frontier because it's too risque.
I already gave him all the DVDs.
Peter?
Ah, okay. Actually, I enjoyed it because like almost all the same reasons as you guys. The new battles, new concerts, new choreography, the songs. But the most thing I enjoyed in watching is little bits and pieces were different from the TV series, mm-hmm. and that was most of them got revealed in the second movie. Something some characteristics are changed, something Grace.
Yeah,
her character totally changed from the TV series, and you can see that she's more into personally into looking after Cheryl.
Okay.
Yeah, personally into it, and That's one of the major ones that mm-hmm. I noticed, and the some of the characters, the relations are more clear
mm-hmm.
and more easy to understand. That's more made into a movie rather than an edited version of the TV series.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I like.
I definitely think they showed Ranker's rise to fame,
mm-hmm.
her whole coming up as an idol, doing all the weird TV commercials, and I mean that is what idol singers go through here, the ones that come from humble beginnings and don't get picked up by AKB48 or something like that. It had a bit of realism to it, I thought.
I felt Ranka was closer to AKB48, Japanese.
Yeah, so it's
idols,
good.
And Cheryl was a little bit American.
Yeah,
definitely. Or Korean idols that are coming to Japan now.
Mm-hmm. So it's good if you like that kind of thing, though. That's the thing.
That's a good
thing.
Girls.
Yeah. So it's right. No.
So
you like AKB48?
Tell us about Bobby.
Okay. The first movie, it pissed me off, literally. Because if it was... The retelling was just too forced. There's too much reused footage. Here and there. The middle of the movie was good. Like you were saying, the rise of Ronka's becoming an idol. That was all interesting. And that was the only thing that was 100% new.
So Rise of Ronka sounds like a Transformers sequel, isn't it?
Rise of Ronka.
It's the moon.
So Ronka's segment was great.
Okay.
Cheryl was still pretty much the same, except for the Black Bunny's number was great.
Lesbian vampires.
I don't care about the lesbian vampire. I just like the Black Bunny in that scene.
Okay.
But what pissed me off was the ending. And the ending was a total Shonen Jump animated movie ending, where...
Nothing changed.
It doesn't matter what happened through that movie, and I don't care about a resolution or who he was going to choose at that point. It's just that... The Vajra attack, they come in and everybody has their 3-second screen time of kicking ass right before the last 5 minutes of the movie, which they happens in the Bleach movies. Whoever's cast in that episode, they just show up.
Don't talk to me about AKB48. He watches Bleach movies, okay?
Okay. Now I'm not going to go into that.
Different
levels. But you've seen a Bleach movie because you saw the first Macross. Frontier movie, so there you go.
Right here.
But that's my point.
Yeah, that comes with bullets, so I'll get it for you.
So that was the thing for me, was that everyone would just bum rush the big attack at the end and move
on. Bum rush? I don't know. Haven't heard that in about a couple of decades.
Yeah, that was the Bobby side story.
the music was good. The new music for the first movie
I think
was
I would put
great.
That out there, because they didn't even release an official soundtrack for it.
No,
was
they
the
didn't.
Universal Bunny album, which was... by Cheryl Gnome, and every song on that album kicked ass, pretty much. I don't think there was a bad song on it. As an album, I put up there as one of the best anime-related albums of all time, but it's strange. pointed out as a soundtrack, because it's all main. There's no BGM in it. There's nothing. It's all main music, which is kind of
odd. No, because didn't they release the Ranka album at the same time?
Well, they had the commercial. No, they released the commercial album a few months later, CM Ranka, which had her...
I guess they wanted both of them represented in the movie at the same time.
But they didn't. It was really, really heavily... Well, Cheryl, but anyway.
Her single had the... like the fake Bandai commercial music.
Yeah, and the construction company and the Daruma Juku.
See, but all those songs were like fun and it's kind of, they just resonated and you remembered them.
True.
More than the movie.
I mean, something that regular Macross fans as opposed to like Yoko Kanno fans might not be aware. Yoko Kanno does a lot of TV commercial music here.
Yeah.
Mm. She has a lot. There's two whole albums of just Kanno, Yoko Kanno television jingles, pretty much. So for her to do the Ranka jingles was pretty much totally keeping with her skill set and experience, but they were catchy. Overall, I'm getting a lot of negativity here. I mean, Peter Seam is pretty much, yeah, it was all right. Me, I'm pretty much, I liked it. You guys are pretty much like, meh.
It's not negativity in the form it's bad, because you could either watch the TV show and go into the second movie, or you can watch the first movie and go into the second movie. But there just wasn't enough new material in the first movie to make it a legitimate movie.
As a segue into the actual main topic.
Well, not today. Yet, because there's something I want to put in. Can I put in something first?
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that I don't think that this first movie was supposed to be a real movie. You know, I think it was just to buy time for the real movie to come later on. I'll explain that later on.
Okay. One thing I loved about the first movie... It's alright. Anyone who watches the video feed will know what you're doing to that cylindrical object. So, one thing I loved about the first movie was, and this is not for the fan service, but Cheryl's phone, which you first see coming up from her cleavage because it's on vibration mode, and that it's in the shape of a taiyaki, which for people who don't know is a Japanese sweet. It's like pastry in the shape of a fish, like a pancake in the shape of the fish with red bean paste in the middle. And the importance of that was that Maine, the singer behind Cheryl, her favorite food is taiyaki. And once they changed Cheryl's phone, I thought it was interesting because you could see the actual singers in real life influencing the animated characters. And then around that time, before that, I'd also been to one of the Macross live concerts right before, just as the TV series ended. And I was really blown away by the fact that both Megumi and Main were in character as their animation characters the entire concert. They referred to each other as Ranka and Cheryl. And then you look at the animation when the movie comes out, and they've influenced the animation. So that's something I've never seen before. Just me, but what were you going to say, Renato?
Oh, are we going about the movie now, the second one?
Yeah, I suppose you should. Let's get into the new movie then, gentlemen.
Pathetic fools! There's no escape.
The wings of farewell. Oh yeah, you can give me a few more lines later, I'll loop them into an opening.
There's better movies out there, definitely.
Now, for those listening, or anyone who's still listening, I pity you. We are going to go into a short segment here with basic, spoiler-free impressions of the movie.
Yes, there'll be about 10 seconds left, because you really can't talk about this movie in terms of
spoilers.
I know, Jesus Christ.
It's going to be a lot easier to talk about once we get into the spoiler territory naturally, but basically the first 5 to 10 minutes of the movie and whatever was in the commercials, whether they're commercials for the movie or commercials for the album, which is out, the commercials are out at the moment, is fair game.
Okay.
They're not considered spoilers. So if anyone listening thinks that those are spoilers, switch off now and just don't turn it back on.
Okay, well, I've written here in my notes, Astro Boy / Blackjack.
You have notes.
Okay. So that's typically spoiling. I mean,
Astro Boy. Well, I mean, as someone who grew up with Kimba the White Lion, you must have been thrilled to see some Tezuka.
I can give a shit about Tezuka.
But he is God. He is God.
He's
in Japan.
The god of The god of manga, according to some, like,
radio... Frederick Schott? Well, god for some people, it's not
yeah.
god for everyone, so...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, no, I mean... I like his characters.
There's different religions out there.
His characters are iconic. Yes, Superman's iconic, but I don't really care.
Superman?
Yeah, you know, in American comics, Superman's
oh,
iconic.
Oh, I see, okay.
Batman's iconic.
I thought you were referring to him as
a... But no, no,
it's a good question.
He's iconic.
Oh, it's just, no. It was... What you're referring to, that was interesting to be like, oh, check that out. But yeah, I think
well,
far too many people geek over Tezuko.
Well, at this point, I already hated the movie just because of the first 5-minute concert scene, which freaked me the hell out.
Now, are we going to go into details on the concert scene?
No. There is a concert scene that begins the movie. It goes on for about 5 minutes, and then after that, you're in a scene where the main characters are gathered, they're talking, it's kind of exposition. And in the background, you're watching clips of Astro Boy and Blackjack. And I was
That's
like,
right.
I was like, oh,
they're
some
like, you know,
better things that I could be doing with my time right now. Oh, thank you for showing me
like
better anime.
Like spending Saturday watching the original Gundam trilogy.
Yeah. I'll go into that later as well. That's the reason.
So,
I'm
so you're saying
right now.
You'd rather be reading a Helen MacArthur book
I didn't see
than
it.
Watching
I
an anime.
Let's step back here.
I can't say bad things about
General
McCarthy, man. She's
general impressions, guys. I'm going to throw this out there. I thought the animation was a big step up. It's not like the TV series had bad animation, but it was pretty obvious in
Ooh.
The first movie that a lot of it was being, you know, reworked. And this being all brand new animation, we should throw that out there. This is all brand new animation.
Except for the VFX
okay.
team getting blown up.
Yes, that's true.
There is a percentage of reused animation from the TV series.
That was the scene where Basara came on.
Oh, no, not that scene.
Astro Boy.
There's a handful of shots from the original series of Frontier.
Okay.
But not as many from the first movie that had them. And they're pretty much the exact same shots.
Yeah, yeah.
They were in the first movie.
Yeah,
you're talking about the action scenes and things.
Well, mostly the action scenes, mm-hmm.
But animation quality overall. I mean, did you guys perceive it?
In terms of the mecha action and the way that I talked about this on the forums as well for a little bit, the way that the in particular the capital ships and like the macros quarter
right.
are depicted, and not just the texture mapping or whatever they're doing there. I think it's probably just Tengen, you know, with Photoshop.
That's another discussion we'll have afterwards. Yeah.
The way that they frame it, you know, with the luscious backgrounds and things like that, it's really, really well done. And I definitely noticed a big jump over the first movie, over the TV series.
Yep.
I thought that was really well done. In terms of characters, I thought they were pretty much the same.
The first movie had that in the beginning. In the Vajra attack in the first movie.
The low angles, where
the camera was positioned to the street level going up, so it made it look like the girl walks for the
power. Yeah, and I didn't really like the way that they tended to intercut between the
TV
first
footage.
Episode TV footage
yeah.
and the new footage, because it was a bit jarring.
Yeah.
But this, as you say, they were mostly all brand new.
Yeah. Right.
And really, really well done, well... the composition was really well thought out. Very good stuff.
Mecha designs.
Movie designs.
The 29. What do we think?
Eureka 7.
Okay, the 29 is Eureka 7.
29 is Eureka 7.
No. It looks, it's the same color. It's got headlights on the front, on the chest.
Really?
It does, yes.
See, this is what happens
to people.
Go back
to look at the Figaro issue.
Down, boy!
This is what happens to people when they watch Eureka
down.
7.
This is me down.
Do not watch Eureka 7, people. It will do this to you.
No, you're going to get lots of hate on the forums. Everyone
likes
it.
No, it doesn't do that to me.
I like the 29. I could do with a better color scheme, but I thought it did what it had to do. And its existence was explained well, briefly, concisely. We'll get into this in the spoiler section. But
design-wise, it was a Valkyrie. So.
Well, it's kind of like the mix of, like, what... Armored pack, fast pack elements, and like the YF-19 elements and the 25 elements.
Yeah, it was the next step, except for the wing boosters.
Yeah. It's kind of like a sidestep in the evolution of it, really. I mean,
yeah.
It was.
It's not really a next step.
As,
it's like.
It's a sidestep, because as an all purpose Valkyrie, it was probably not anywhere near as good as the 25.
It was supposed to be an anti
But it was
anti-Vajra
special,
yeah.
pretty much. Yeah. Anything? the quarter or the 29? Or?
The quarter looked especially impressive. Yeah. Shiny. Yeah. For some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the more quarter, so than, like, had some impressive actions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. That's because Max was piloting.
You were seven.
Max.
Max?
Max. Did I fall asleep in the
was
movie?
Was there a cameo in this movie? I don't remember.
No.
Yeah, there was.
No. There was a cameo? Huh? There was a cameo?
Maybe there was.
Okay. Oh, the Tezuka people, right?
Yeah. Astro Boy cameo.
Yeah. Superman?
And some of these, that Tezuka character.
The Blackjack.
His personal character.
Right.
What?
The UFO catchers.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
So was there anything else animation we moved on? How about, like, characters? Character-wise, how did the characterization of, like, you know, Alto, Ranka, Cheryl kind of change compared to the TV series?
Okay.
The triangle has been, like, you know, been so obvious on the, you know, the rooftop scene where...
Yeah. I don't know. To me, the triangle was resolved in the first movie, not because he chose. It's the first movie starts out that in the retelling, Ranka and Alto are childhood friends already. They already know each other.
Yeah.
So Ranka might develop a crush, but he's already decided.
Right, exactly. I thought the same thing. There's no tension there, really.
Yeah, I mean, she might have a crush on him or whatever, but...
When in the first movie, how young were they when they knew each other, though? Like, did they ever specify?
No, they didn't.
No.
I thought it was a high school, like, from entering junior high kind of thing, was what I presumed. I didn't get the sense they knew each other.
Yeah, they didn't go
school.
To the same school or anything like that. They were in different schools.
That's
yeah.
right. That's right.
So I don't know how they...
I mean, I got the feeling... Yeah,
I guess he just ordered...
He'd known her for a few... I got the feeling he'd known her for a few years,
yeah.
but
yeah.
not that they were childhood friends.
Or maybe they're like, just, you know, just go to the... It's funny. Yam, pretty much, so, you know...
Right, that's what I mean, yeah, yeah. He must have ordered a lot of food. Michael, or Michael, or Michelle, or whatever his name is...
Klein.
he used to... know Ranka as well, and probably to the same extent that Alto did, because he was the one who actually said, "Oh, Ranka-chan," when she turned up at the school with the things, and he was the one that that Ozma said, "Hey, look for my sister, because she's gone missing," and he was the one who had to go, "Hey, you know what? I'm fed up." Yeah, so enough.
I didn't interpret it that way at all because
you'd seen the TV shows, eh?
No, because. Him referring to her as Ranka-chan was just in character for Michael, because he would call all the girls chan, because he's hitting on all of them. They're all below him. He hits on them all. So I didn't pick up anything more than he'd been in SMS. He obviously knew all about Ozma. He knew about the family situation, and Ozma trusted him as a subordinate, was what I took out of that.
Yeah, maybe.
So
but that was in the series, in the movie version. They're already...
I think it's very difficult
but they're all hanging out. It didn't seem like it was a secret thing.
I think it's very difficult to judge anything just based on the first movie. And if you watch the series, then it's going to influence the way you think about the characters in the movie. But then the movie characters have their own kind of characterization. So it's really... You know, there's no way to win. Yeah. Mm. You know?
I thought that in the second movie, Ranka's character was... How I put it? More sympathetic or just... She was less whiny.
I thought she was more whiny.
Really?
Her voice was higher, for starters.
No.
Yeah.
Nakajima's, she's no longer a teenager like she was when she originally did that character.
When she originally did that character, she hadn't had much acting experience, and therefore she was acting better. When you have
she
a
was
lot
acting
of,
more naturally.
That's right. When you have a lot of lessons and practice and stuff...
You have to go for the anime voice! I'm talking like this now!
But she used to talk with a kind of voice that I hadn't heard much in anime.
English dub of Goobaba decided right there.
You never spoke words.
All right.
How about the pacing?
The pacing?
Pacing in the second movie.
I thought it was better than the first, pacing-wise.
Yeah.
Wow. Because the first had, big battle at the beginning, big battle at the end, some minor spikes in the middle, but mostly drama. This had... It flew by really quick. I mean, I've seen it four times now, and I still don't get bored. It's almost, and I hate to say this because I hate Michael Bay, but it's almost like the Michael Bay of anime. Because
there's a lot of
there's so much stuff just going on. You just before you know it, it's over.
Yeah, and
they even have the Rock in it.
Yeah, they have the Rock in it.
What?
No, he's talking about the wrestler in the cameo.
Oh, right. That's the one.
Can you smell?
Alto's pacing, singing? Pacing, gentlemen.
Yeah, okay, well, it's a bit difficult to say because the plot is so contrived. So you've got this love triangle here, and then you've got the SMS characters, and then you've got all this stuff in the background, all these shadowy plots and like Grace, what she's up to, and what the Frontier people are up to, and it doesn't seem that they're related. So it's kind of like you're watching two movies, but they
come together.
Mixed together. They do come together in a way.
They intercross, but they don't actually.
Yeah, if you watch the last scene, can you actually tell me that the SMS characters knew what was going on behind the scenes? Were they really involved? And I think that that's what's weird about me with the pacing, because I have to keep track of a lot of exposition scenes interspersed within all of the action scenes. And for someone who's only seen it once, I can honestly tell you, I don't know what the plot of this movie is.
Yeah,
but the action was cool, and I would recommend it for the action.
That's a box quote, right?
I think after the first viewing, when we get to the end, so much stuff happens in the finale of the movie.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's like a good two or three battles going on at the same time.
Yeah.
And you don't know who's the good guy or who's the bad guy. Especially if you're Japanese as shit. So I'm like two steps behind you guys.
Well, you've seen it four times, so you're the only one who actually knows what the story is.
Nah, I thought the plot was relatively straightforward. It wasn't necessarily logical, but we'll get into that. So pacing-wise, I think everyone's in agreement. That's
can we get into it?
Yeah, for the first movie, I had that expectation that this is going to follow the TV story.
Mm-hmm.
And
There
was almost like about 60 or 70% TV story, but like 30 or 40%
mm-hmm.
like different story that's going on that will be connected to the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, the second movie, I had no idea what was going to be going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like having like 2 hours like flew by, you know.
Yeah.
Because I enjoyed it because I didn't know it. Didn't have any information about it.
Yeah.
I didn't find the first one dragged that badly, but this one bang, it was over. All right, we're going to get into spoilers in a moment, but first let's talk music. Because I mentioned the Universal Bunny album earlier. What did everyone think of the music in the show? Yoko Kano returning again for musical duties.
Okay, I'll go first. First of all, I think the first movie's music was better.
Okay.
Because, like, I can't remember any music
mm-hmm.
from the second movie. That
really?
That was, like, you know, that was already in the first movie or the TV series.
I've had two songs from it stuck in my head for a week now, and the soundtrack doesn't come out for another week. It's killing me.
Yeah, because I saw it four times. And I saw
this
it
is
once.
True.
Yeah, I would say the same. And as I mentioned before we started recording, I recognized the reused music from the TV show, and I think it was a waste to show these intense, brand new visuals, like things that I'm not allowed to talk about again, but to have them with recycled music near the end of the movie also was kind of a bit of a wasted opportunity. Because it only gives you half of a kind of a fresh
new feeling
sense. Yeah, because you've got new visuals, but orally you're kind of used to, and you can it in a way it kind of makes you feel like you know what's going to happen, even though you're not supposed to. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I can say that there are certain themes or certain tunes you've heard.
They tend
to accompany certain actions. In the TV series?
Yeah.
You could recite the whole song while you're at it? No?
I could. I did it much better before. I can't remember it right now.
He used to be able to do it really good when he really hated the show.
Okay, well...
Damn you for making me
laugh. Was there anything else? Before we wrap this up and get into spoiler territory, overall, yes or no?
Yes or no what?
The movie, is it worth seeing?
Oh, yeah,
like
it's worth
it? Overall impressions, No, I'm talking overall your Megatron transforming skills here, Renato.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh, well, he
I transform.
I could transform. I didn't want to be too rough with it. This is an original.
Overall, yeah.
Hold on. The music. Let me check in on that. Yeah, I would agree that the first movie had a lot more fresh new music. And this new movie, Ronka had the better music over Cheryl.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
And I think what Renato says is true, because all of Ronka's new music fit all the new scenes with Ronka, and those specific scenes went with that music. So, and then all the Cheryl stuff was the same old Cheryl stuff since the first episode. And
I wasn't just talking about the songs themselves. I was talking about
they're great
the
songs.
Background music as well, the orchestral score.
Yeah, they're great songs, but I wanted more intense Cheryl songs.
No, thank you.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
The background music, yeah, was this probably mostly the same.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Hmm. Okay.
Bomb, 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 bomb. That was it.
Which isn't bad, it's just we've heard it before.
Yeah.
Yes, you will hear Imo in the second movie.
You also hear some Gira Gira Sama.
Oh, God, no. Yes. In non-canon frontier music, played this song that was made for a summer Macross fan club event.
It is canon. I mean, it was on. It's been on an album, and it was the song in the commercial on Yan Yan clip.
You know, I really hate that word. That
it's
canon
fine,
word that everyone's obsessed with.
But I just don't like the song on its own.
Is the movie canon? Is the TV show canon?
I wish we'd go to the movie. The movie should be canon.
I think the ending should be canon. But before we get into that, final impressions, gents. Like, is it worth it? Was it worth the wait? Did it live up to expectations?
Yeah.
It surpassed expectations for me because I saw the first movie. Can I say one thing? You don't need to see the first movie. Okay, you have that.
There is
one scene you have to see from the first movie.
Only one scene you need to see.
Well, this is even including the fact that there's a 2-minute recap at the beginning of this movie.
Yeah,
you have to see the phone coming out of Cheryl's breasts. I mean, that's a must see.
Was that in the movie?
It's the first movie. Oh,
you just said the reason you like that scene is because Main likes teriyaki. It is the breasts. You're all about the breasts.
That's the importance of it.
No.
But the reason I have a still shot as my wallpaper is something altogether different.
Yeah, it's an animated GIF.
Yeah.
So, what was it in your first movie? You said there was something in the first movie. You
can't say that until spoilers.
Oh, okay. That's
fine. Okay, going back on Macross movies, the best Macross movie is Do You Remember Love? Or Love, Do You Remember, whichever you want to call it, is probably the best one, hands down. Especially if you get to see it in 35mm Roppongi Midnight screening.
Yeah.
Back to back with the first Frontier movie.
Yeah.
The
audience had the exact same reaction.
Even Tengen had the same reaction. He was sitting there going, don't put my movie next to theirs.
At the end of Do You Remember Love, we had a standing ovation at 2:30 in the morning. The end of the false songstress.
It's like, okay, let's go home now.
But, so nothing will be Do You Remember Love? But I will say that...
Not even the Galaxy is calling.
No, not that one.
On, that had the most awesome macro song in all history.
Oh, God. Whoa, dueling banjos in space.
That was an awesome song. So for me, look, the movie surpassed expectations in most respects. There are certain things I wanted from it. It didn't deliver, but I'm not surprised. Because... you know, everyone was hoping so much, and there were so many cock teasers in the trailer. There were so many tasty little tidbits dangled out there by Kawamori that some got delivered on, some didn't, some turned out completely different. And for what it is, I enjoyed pretty much everything they did with that movie.
But out of all the Macross movies and TV series, the Second Frontier movie is The Empire Strikes Back of the Macross franchise.
Okay.
It's, the tempo, everything, the way it goes, how it unravels, it's The Empire Strikes Back all over again.
Okay.
That's what I would say. It's not perfect, like The Empire Strikes Back isn't perfect, but it's along those lines.
I think that's probably a good note to end this on before we get into spoiler territory. So, Adrian, if we had to summarize this movie, the second movie, in one word, what would it be?
Isamu!
Yahoo! It's all there. Yes, the rumors are correct. Wife 19, all its glory for a whole what?
That's not the word I would have used.
That's why I didn't ask you.
Yeah. Facepalm doesn't count.
Yeah. It was going to be shark jumping, but never mind.
Shark jumping.
It's two words. No,
in this day and age, we call it fan service.
So the wife 19 does make like a 4-second cameo.
Yes.
And just to put the rumors to rest, there's a reinforcement SMS fleet turning up to help the Macross Quarter, and you just see the wife 19 kind of take off, come by the screen, go into the atmosphere, just with someone who's like, yahoo! He's like, I'm coming to help you girls or ladies or something like that. Yeah.
It's also got special fast packs attached.
Did it?
Yes. Jeez. You've seen it four times.
I was listening to the man's voice.
I heard the voice before I saw the Valk.
Yeah.
But yeah, I heard the voice because the Valk didn't really look that recognizable for the half second of screen time it gets.
Because it was all CG'd and prettied up, which is, blends into the other
Valks. But also, it's got VF-25 style fast packs, unless I saw it wrong.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, at the end of either wing.
No, he does not make a actual character
appearance.
Illustrated appearance.
No.
Just the voice and the Valk.
Yeah.
But if you watch the Japanese version of Macross Plus, which should be the only version you ever watch, you'll recognize the voice and that specific yahoo!
Well, that's not true. I like Dr. Watley as Isamu.
Oh, God. So.
Lane.
And that is not just fanboy speculation. He is actually listed as first name voice act, the character, in the credits.
Yeah, no, he is. And
what's his name? Something Takumi, right?
Yes, you're correct. I've forgotten his first name. But it's been mentioned, the most recent novel, I think it was, that Isamu's father was friends with Captain Wilder.
Yeah.
And also, time-wise, he'd be, late 40s by the time this happened? Oh, sorry, late 30s, early 40s. By the time this story happens. And also, he's with an SMS fleet. And if anything was to suit Isamu's personality, because he really hated the chain of command, the authority in the military, private military contractor, where he could pretty much do his own thing as long
as he... That's true, yeah.
It's so in character for him. So it was a really awesome cameo, which made sense within the universe.
That's true. I didn't think about it that way. Yeah.
But let's take a step back. Where do we want to start with spoilers?
Macross Quarters coming up.
A million.
It was actually like 7, apparently. But yeah. Let's start with the Cheryl concert at the beginning.
One for each color of the rainbow.
That is a weird-ass concert. It's probably the weakest song in the movie, I'd say.
Well,
I don't remember.
That opening concert? Song,
yeah.
Yeah, the opening concert was... I don't know what you'd say. I guess it was kind of bittersweet because going into it, it was exactly the same flair as the first movie.
Right.
It was like, oh, God.
Bizarre visual.
Yeah, it was like, I don't want to see Dancing Clockman. I don't want to see this shit again. Just give me something. And
you got Dancing Cheryls.
Well, no, Dancing Nurse Cheryls with glasses. Yeah, right.
But they,
okay.
And fetuses.
Yeah, that's a
thing. Oh, yeah.
They ratcheted the weirdness up a notch because you got test tube Cheryls being born in kind of 3D CG.
Cheryl marrying herself.
No,
yes,
a male
Catholic
Cheryl,
wedding.
A female Cheryl, baby test tube Cheryls. And when they got married,
flower Cheryls.
Their heads were these orchids, which then intertwined. It was very hot.
And I was watching this going, hey, you remember the Zentradi? Yeah, those were fun.
But you gotta remember, there's a new audience, like the Fujoshi audience, the boys love characters, and the cosplay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all for marketing so that people can cosplay at Comic-Con and all that
stuff. Oh, yeah, no, there was enough cosplay material in this movie for the next 12 months, easy.
Yeah.
Well, they were selling the nurse outfits outside the theater when I went to see it.
They did?
Yes, at Ikebukuro.
Oh. Well, was it at Marui 1 where they're doing the Tenjin?
Yeah. Right.
There's a pretty famous...
Yeah, there's
a pretty famous... if it's Loli costume or Goth Loli costume maker. They've done like a crossover promotion and they're doing these costumes that are... It's not even costumes, they're more like just dresses that are... Yeah. Influenced.
Oh, he's cracking open a 7-up.
7-up.
We're going hardcore now.
Yeah, he's hardcore.
But yeah, there's a lot of costume fodder in here. But so the Cheryl concert, it was a good concert, I thought. But the big shock was the end of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a good concert, but it was the same thing we saw before. And going into it, it was like, not this again. And then that scene where she coughs up blood and gets sick.
Yeah.
Basically falls to the floor in the middle of the concert.
The big shock, I thought you were talking about the flower kissing.
No, just the fact that that scene, the way it was framed, I'm presuming it was her opening song for a concert. She goes all out, and at the end of the song, she coughs up blood, collapses.
Oh, they
and she's just on the ground with the white outfit on, with blood all over it. It's pretty hardcore. It was at that moment that I was like, okay, A, this is going to be good, but B, I... now do not know what to expect. That was kind of Kawamori throwing down the gauntlet, in my opinion. Yeah.
But before all that happened, the beginning of that visual concert was the wedding dress scene, which is the only scene. It's just a scene in the concert.
Yep.
It's in the like the final poster. Alto's holding the person in the wedding dress. Who is that? Yep. And the trailers. You know, who's the one at the chapel?
Yeah.
Is it Clan?
It's just Cheryl. They're both Cheryls.
Yeah. Cheryl marrying herself.
But a lot of the things, a lot of the teasers from the original trailer, the VF1A, I think it was, the red VF1A.
How do you know it's 1A? People sure it's a 1J because it's on the shadow.
It had fast packs in the preview, but in the actual movie it didn't.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't an actual... It was a prop in a ranker concert.
And can we talk about what I was talking about now?
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
The preview at the end of the first movie showed a UN Spacey colored Koenig monster, but that's not in the movie either.
Well, there's a monster in the movie.
Who cares?
It's not just a colored monster. It's a Gatling. Like a version 2 with Gatling guns and bullets.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in Batroid mode.
Yeah, which we never see.
Yeah.
No. And no, you don't see it in the movie either. So...
No, and that's something we actually mentioned to Tenjin afterwards. Yeah. Like,
and that scene, just that whole space battle.
What did you mention to Tenjin?
Like, what happened to the monster?
Yeah.
What happened to the Gatling gun Koenig monster? He's like,
what monster?
What the one from the trailer with the gats on his arm.
They've been working him so hard that he doesn't remember what happened.
I wouldn't put it past him. But either way, it was obviously, like a lot of stuff in that trailer, made just to tease people. It wasn't
a teaser,
He never says that word.
There's no in your face Kida.
No,
they do
really.
It, but the audience does it. She just signals them to do it.
And this scene isn't in there either, as far as I can tell. Did you remember seeing this scene?
No.
There you go.
Okay.
Because Cheryl changes into that costume before they're singing.
Yeah, there's no triangles.
So how do we want to approach this then? Let's look at the overall plot. So that's the kind of bang that the movie opens with. So you know the virus, was it the V virus?
The V-type virus.
Is definitely in full effect. Cheryl's days are limited. It's serious. And to get ahead of myself, one thing I love about this movie, there was no real magical girl ranker. There was a magical girl in the concert, but there was no magical girl. I will heal Cheryl's virus through my
skin. Oh, yeah.
That was gone.
I'm glad that
that's
gone.
That was gone. How do we even approach this? What happens after the concert?
Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball, Macross Frontier.
That's right. There's everyone hanging out at the beach. Aruto and Rank have a conversation. He's asking her about why she freaked out and attracted all the Vajra to her at the end of the first movie.
At the beach, I noticed that in the first movie, when Alto met you know, Cheryl. Also was with Cheryl at the shelter or something, and she said, "You don't like being with me?" That's like line from Mimei.
Yeah.
And this time Ranka did you wait with these big sunglasses?
Yes.
Ah,
yeah, the Mimei sunglasses. Yeah. No, you're completely right. And she was talking about
details,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, that's the little thing. I mean, that's all Kamui can really do, because the new fan base for Frontier is so huge. You can't make the old stuff. You can just reference it.
And then something extremely important happens.
What, Rank?
You see Captain Wilder
surfing.
And that's important because of later.
Like, yeah, some girl was like one of the bridge girls. Like,
what was her name again?
Monica.
Monica.
Because it's my mother's name.
She gets hit in the face with a big ball.
Yeah.
And goes.
And that's what
it's down. Also, like Rank is telling Alto about, you know, she thinks the Vajra might
have
emotions, and that their heart doesn't necessarily have anything to do with their brain, because we've established in the first movie in the series that the Vajra have very small brains and that they probably have a hive mind. And Alto's like, you know, no, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm going to protect you. Just, you know, forget about all that crap. Vajra gone down.
The half-world flies away and catch it.
Yeah.
Ozma goes, what?
Ozma turns up, thinks Alto's hitting on her, and then anyway, they're going out for a recon mission anyway. And it is the most awesome recon mission ever. Nathan,
yes.
You want to tell us why? Because the quarter defaults.
They come out of default in the quarter, the squads. Clan happens to notice something familiar. Like a, I don't know, what do they call that thing? A drift in space.
A wreck.
A wrecked drift in space. Bedolza ship. Bedolza
class.
Yeah.
Bedolza class ship from Do You Remember Love? The one that exploded.
Yep.
But it's not canon. How could it be? It's not canon.
Well, it floated over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just hanging around space, and it's obviously been defeated by the Vajra. And it's teeming with them. It's infested. There's like hundreds of the little buggers in there. And, of course, a fight ensues. And one of the... It's not the queen, but it's a...
Well, you get a new
Vajra. Yeah.
It's like a heavy-armored Vajra that doesn't fly or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not like on the side of an asteroid or something. Right?
Yeah, they come
it's
out
like
of an asteroid.
A monster
yeah.
version of the Vajra.
Yeah, it's like a
and
monster version of Vajra.
Yeah.
And this entire scene is basically a reimagining of that scene that's halfway through the series where they overtake the Macross, but it's not the Macross, the global ship. Except instead of it being the global ship, it's the Bedolza ship from Do You Remember Love, which is an interesting twist.
But of course, they have to take this queen or whatever it is out. Aruto goes in, you think he's got it, but then he gets completely skewered. He goes down, and Barrera takes the shot and takes its head off. Now, this is why Aruto is out of the 25. He's in hospital. It's not that there are no more 25s left for him to fly. I'm sure there are plenty. But he's in hospital. Cheryl comes to see him. And I'll go back to that in a moment. But basically, later on in the movie, Ozma introduced him to the 29, and the point of the 29 is this is an anti-Vajra machine. It's like you've got double the motors, we've put fold quartz into it, so it's got stronger barriers,
more firepower,
it's more maneuverable.
Which I don't really get this. Did they know what fold quartz was at this point?
Yeah, they did, because they established that the staff, including Luca, who should die, in the human fleet have been experimenting with it as well.
Did they explain why in the end of the last movie when Brera introduces himself to Alto and they did that gay ass like Top Gun be my wingman anytime, and then when they see each other in this movie they're annoyed at each other? Yeah, so like, they leave off from one movie like, oh hey, I'm so and so,
you're my best friend.
Yeah, and then in this movie, he's like,
I think it's
even at the very beginning.
When the movie opens,
first scene.
Well, because when the movie opens, you can remember, Cheryl still has spy charges hanging over her. She's hired the SMS at the end of the first movie, and when this movie opens, basically because of those charges, he's been commanded to be half bodyguard, half he's keeping an eye on her. He's half looking after her for the government or for their
service. And hiding from Ronca.
And yeah, he's got Barrera's outfit on, pretty much. Yeah. He's got the same kind of outfit on. So he's with Barrera 24/7 at that point. I imagine I'd get pretty pissed off at
but
him.
But he's going
to... That's why, you know, that's because, like, they're still hired by Cheryl at that point, SMS.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
That's right, because they say later on that...
Why is it just him, though?
No.
Well, no, he was told to do it. There was an order, like, it was between her and Ozma, like, he was the one stationed to do it. And, but anyways.
They've got school and everything to go to.
Not so much in this movie.
I wish they would have had that locker scene. Wanted the locker scene.
What locker scene is that?
This from the TV version?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wasn't that in the first movie?
No, they skipped that.
Oh.
They don't jump in the locker and then her phone vibrates.
Yeah, I need to rewatch that episode. Anyway, so what happens then? They go. Cheryl takes Alto up on the roof, trying to convince him to get out of the military or out of the SMS. And Leon pops up. Well, Ranker pops up as well, and you know, he realizes that Cheryl's with Alto and starts getting all crying.
And there's a big triangle drawn on.
Yeah, on the rooftop. Yeah. There's a triangle.
There's
on
a big
the
triangle on the rooftop between them.
Another signal that as Ranka tries to run away, she falls.
Yeah, and then...
Oh, Alto's in a wheelchair at this point.
Yeah, at that point, Leon comes out, he's clapping, he's like, that's a nice triangle, guys. Mm-hmm. But at that point, he arrests Cheryl for, you know, calling her the false songstress.
Yeah. And murders all the other bodyguards.
And then he murders pretty much everyone who was working for Grace. Grace starts her coup.
Including Grace, yeah.
And Leon's men just, they've all got... What do they call the pilot suits?
X-gears.
They got X-gears on, but they're like X-gears crossed with Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Exosquad, Robotech.
No. No. Oh, no!
They've all got like semi-fiber optic, thermo-optic camouflage. They're all badass, and they just wipe the crap. Grace gets completely massacred.
Yeah.
What is that yellow stuff coming down her face?
Yeah. She had oil dripping out of her ankles. Yeah.
Oh, that actually had a hidden cholesterol down.
So what happened after that?
So, well, the whole tone of the movie changed.
Yeah, it does. That's right, because Cheryl immediately...
It went from surfing in the beach to
Ghost in the Shell.
Murder.
Yeah, well, it is pretty hardcore. It shows so many people getting killed, and then Cheryl gets the death penalty. She's sent to Space Alcatraz. Yeah.
Oh, you have to explain why she gets sent to jail, though.
Because
what was her crime?
Spy. Yeah.
Well, she was arrested for being a spy.
She was part of a plot to...
They
were controlling the Vadra.
Yeah.
And they were the ones who called
the
Vadra to the Frontier Fleet in the first place. That's why...
They worked out her
Vadra
earring.
Attacked. Because they never said in the first movie why the Vadra are attacking the fleet.
No, they just show up.
Yeah, they said that it was because her earring was fold quartz, and then that tied in with the timing of the Vajra attacking when she had concerts. So, obviously, she's part of some big plot and some death penalty.
The full song for us, oh my god.
So she goes out to, gets sent out to Alcatraz, and... yeah, look, Space Alcatraz is probably the weakest part of the movie for me. I don't know what you guys thought. I mean, I can overcome silliness in a movie, especially anime, if it's cool.
The idea of her being given the death penalty and being taken into prison was really something that caught me by surprise, so I like that. And but then they
the
go,
prison.
Hey, let's try and break her out of jail. And
but the
and
prison,
like,
the prison is like made, you know, it's still on an island, it's got stone walls, metal bars,
right,
half a dozen
yeah.
guards.
It's a bit... And it's called Alcatraz.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is precedent in this, like, you know, whether it be Mach 2 or Summer Frontier, they build all the iconic landmarks of Earth. On
Mach
2?
Did you say Mach Cross 2?
So Mach 2, I know it's not canon, but, you know, there's a precedent for it.
Canon? What canon? What do you mean canon?
So it doesn't surprise me that they do this, because, heck, you know, the Sydney Opera House is in the Mach Cross Frontier itself, you know.
Is it?
Yeah, but... Just they could have spruced it up a bit. I mean, you are on a space battleship. Why do you have rock walls and make it a bit more high tech?
In fact, that town, you know, it's like San Francisco. You know, like
it's built half on San Fran and half on Shibuya, from what I've heard.
Right, so that's what I mean. Where's Sydney Opera House?
It's on the harbour, and that part's based off Yokohama.
Yeah,
and they wanted it, and the Sydney Opera House is also by a bay, so Sydney Harbour. Anyway, they decide. Captain Wilder decides, look, Cheryl still owes us for overtime. She hasn't finished paying up. We're going to break her out. And, but before they decide this, the best part of the movie happens, which is Luca dies.
Mm-hmm. And he will be sorely missed. Moving on.
I was cheering. I was so cheering. He gets so-called killed in space, but rescued by...
Michelle.
Hey, this is the spoiler cast. We can give it all away.
But that scene was really badly animated.
That came out afterwards.
It was. When they killed... When they...
I think he tried to fix it afterwards. Kalmari said, oh, let's not kill him. Let's have Michael fix it.
Oh, God.
And no, so they moved over.
No, was probably... You found out right, very, very close to what I was saying about Captain Wilder deciding to break out Cheryl, because it was from the evidence he got from Luca, who'd been rescued.
Well, in that case, him being killed was...
It happened
quite earlier.
Happened earlier.
Also, is he Leon's son or what?
No, Leon was dating... Luca's older sister.
And
that's how he
saw the beach.
Yes.
You know, and Michelle was trying to hit on her, but couldn't. And they, Clan and Michelle saw.
And Luca walks up to his hot babe, and Michelle's like, what the? And he walks up with her, it's because it's his sister.
Yeah.
Oh, it all makes sense now.
That beach had so many plot hooks in it. It was, it was pretty clever in that way. So
it was a beach full of exposition.
So they decide to break Cheryl out, and they decide to do this by having a concert.
A Macro 7
style.
Macro 7?
Rankali and Lovely Bomber.
Lovely Bomber. Sorry.
Come on, you had to love it. I mean, even though you don't like the characters, that was cool.
If they were doing the songs from Macro 7, then it would have been better. But...
I gotta admit, I would have liked that, yeah.
Mihail as Basada.
That was pretty good.
Clans, Mulane.
It was a nice little homage. Although this does remind me, one thing I forgot to mention was Ranker's first concert, which happened before all this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was awesome.
And
why did we forget that? It was so awesome.
Well, it was an awesome concert, just it wasn't really that important narrative.
And this is, again, one of those things that just diverts the plot away from actually moving forward. So it's always... I think the plot line always moves in a kind of a zigzag motion towards the end.
Right. Like the Eternal Circus.
If you feel that poetic justice, maybe, yeah, fine.
No, the Ranker concert I really liked. It had that magical girl motif, and it turned out to be... of course it was cute and bright colours and whatnot, but it turned out to be a lot more catchy than I expected.
Well, the song went with the new music. The new music went with the new animation, the story.
The open Ranker.
Big West is smart. Created a new magical girl series.
I kind of liked it as well. They had some really, they had some interesting visuals.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that pop up book set was cool.
Yeah,
was awesome.
Yeah,
but
the funny flying bears and stuff.
Yeah,
so, it was kind of cool. There were a few scenes in that concert that brought back Sharon Apple. Like the way she had interaction with the audience happening.
Oh, the little Rankers coming up
to the audience, and then they changed the audience would change costumes, which was a reference to Do You Remember Love? So I thought that was cool.
Cheryl didn't get pissed that Ranka was rising to fame.
Well, Cheryl knew she was dying. Although another thing that Grace came up with was like, we need transfusions. Was it Ranka's blood or her organs?
Bowels.
I think it's her blood though, because she's got the
transplant.
They were saying that, the organs, I think.
The virus.
Oh, the virus is in her stomach. Or in her belly somewhere.
So Grace was like...
Oh, in her small intestines!
Yeah, small
intestines.
Intestines.
That's where it is.
So, while they're watching the concert, on the way to the concert, Grace is like, well, let's go and watch the first and last big concert of Ranker. Because she's like, we're going to save you, Cheryl, by cutting Ranker's guts open.
Yeah. You see, there's a lot of stuff there that it's just there, but it's not really adding to the plot.
Yeah, but repeat viewings, comes up.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of giving the hint that Grace is this evil character when she's just concerned about Cheryl.
True.
Yeah, and before that, Cheryl was like being thrown in a bed, like a bed-like stuff.
Oxygen chamber tank.
And she just came out and like was looking at this picture of Alto.
Yeah.
Just all in Kabuki.
Yeah.
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 It's just like, looking at it, and then, you know, like coughing up blood again. Grace comes in. That shows that, you know, Cheryl had known what Alto was, like,
yep.
Alto was doing before he joined the SMS.
Yep.
Mm. And he was a great Oyama of a kabuki show, a girl act, and that sort of connects with the past.
Mm-hmm.
The show.
Yeah, Cheryl definitely knew who he was before
mm-hmm.
having met him.
And
which is kind of a record.
Back when Leon stopped Grace's little uprising, it became obvious that he, along with Luca, had been playing around with fold quartz, and they were working out ways to defend themselves, well, control the Vajra, using the what do we call the sound waves? The hyperdimensional fold waves or whatever.
Fold waves, yeah.
Fold
wave amps.
Fold waves. So the SMS crew break out Cheryl on the way out.
Oh, wait, you didn't mention one thing.
Okay.
Alto.
The only connection to the first movie was, Alto busts into Alcatraz, rescues Cheryl,
mm-hmm.
gets her out of the prison cell, and then uses the same pyrotechnics that was in the movie.
Hang on, no one's mentioned that Alto is dressed up as a maid throughout all of this.
He's not a maid, he's a Lolita.
He's a goth Loli.
Yeah, he's dressed as a goth Loli. He has a skirt on and this little thing on his head.
And I was feeling really...
But why did they do that?
Sexually ambiguous?
No,
because
the tone of the scene is really, really difficult to pin down in that one scene, because it's a really dramatic scene. He's coming through the walls, he's making holes in the walls, he's opening up the bars or whatever, he's getting Cheryl out, and Cheryl's like, Alto, is that you? And is that supposed to be a comical scene, or is that supposed to be a dramatic scene?
That was completely dramatic.
They played it straight, but I don't think that was the correct choice. But then, to play it comically would have been a failure as well.
Well, she asked
so
him, yeah.
You can't have it both ways. A guy dressed up as a goth lolly saving you out of prison,
and
when you're on death row, even, with a terminal disease... It's just too much of a thematic.
You have to explain for us, why was he dressed as a goth lolly?
Because he had to use the pyrotechnics under his skirt.
Right.
Which,
also, he was a stage dancer as part of his cover at Ranker's concert. He was a better dancer than Ranker.
He's a better...
Goth lollies never fit in with Firebomber. Everyone else was dressed up as Firebomber.
He's a better dancer than man.
Well, that's... I think I'm a better dancer
than man.
Cheryl proves she's hardcore because while she's been in prison, she's been writing lyrics on the wall for the final song of the show.
With her blood.
She's coughing up blood and writing on the wall. I was like, snap, that's hardcore. But they break her out, and while they're escaping in some underground trolley that's presence is yet to be explained.
Let's rewind.
One of the brothers
at the concert. Did you notice the Ventrati guys?
Oh, yeah. The
they're
snow.
Watching? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The two guys who are on the planet that got half eaten by a vortex in the TV series, right? That was the Chiron wannabe.
Yeah, Temujin. Yeah, that's one of the links from
Temujin.
Temujin. The frontier version of Temujin.
Temujin.
Temujin?
Yeah, that's,
Temujin?
That could be that's
Temujin.
His name.
Yeah. No, okay.
Yeah. I think
Temujin.
That's, yeah, it's like a joke.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a ninja.
Yeah, and next book's from Zentradi.
Yeah, that was his Japanese subtitle.
Yeah.
Mm.
Was there anything else about the concert you guys wanted to...
Well, one thing, when Cheryl was going into Alcatraz, being put into Alcatraz, there are like some other girl inmates that are like looking at her, but they do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like in the movies, you know, like Hollywood movies, when you know some famous guy goes into a prison and they go like, woo-hoo, hey, come here, man. I'll just play with you, man.
Yeah, I get the feeling that,
like that.
Yeah.
Well, they're all tapping spoons during the jailbreak and the concert scene.
I get the feeling that, and I think this explains partly why they did Space Alcatraz, but to the Japanese, yeah, this is a country with a, 95 to 99% confession rate by criminals. They don't, you know, that's supposed to be a positive thing. They're all supposed to want to reform. It's really because of police tactics, let's say, but it's a very low crime country and a low crime culture, and the concept of a prison, and life inside that prison is as foreign as we are to the Japanese. You know, it might as well be a foreign country. And I just felt that what the Japanese do when they're trying to portray foreigners, because they don't have any exposure to them in Japan, they refer to Hollywood. So what have they done here? They've gone and watched The Rock. They've gone and watched some Hollywood movies, and they've designed the place just based on old Hollywood movies. But they don't really know how people should act. And I really kind of felt that kind of disconnect. Whereas, yeah, space is space opera, it's fantasy, it's anime. They can do it however they want. But a kind of real-life setting like that, I got the feeling it just felt foreign to them, so they didn't know what they were doing.
But as corny as that whole scene, jailbreak thing was, it didn't ruin the movie.
No, yeah. I think it did.
Was perfectly fine. Actually, it kept the pacing of the movie going. So.
Yeah, and it acted as a concert, so...
Yeah. Now, you couldn't have had her in prison for any longer than that. Mm-hmm. You would have slowed the movie down to
yeah. Like in the rescue show, mm-hmm. they put her on the stage, they sing together, and all the guys go crazy.
And that was a tiny little dance of them together, and it's like, well, the next Macross concert they do. They also, Ranker's dance in the open Ranker song is like, I'm waiting to see Megumi do their dance in the next concert. She'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, every cosplayer at the next Comic Con will be doing it.
So
yeah, but so they escape.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and prior to that was where Ranka starts figuring out that Brera's her brother.
Yeah,
because he goes and grabs her off the street as he's running from.
As he's getting stabbed by a random.
The
Nuns.
But then he pops back up as they're escaping from Space Alcatraz.
He's getting harpooned in the chest
and
randomly.
And he wants Ranka to come with him.
Yeah.
And Ozma says no.
No, Cheryl says no.
Cheryl says no, but Ozma turns up.
No. Almost.
A little bit almost.
Yeah.
A little bit later.
There's a conflict there. Okay. Well, back at the concert scene when they're on the stage. And Alto's there dancing behind them. They get dropped a level. Like, the concert floor goes down, and it takes them to the center of wherever the hell they're at.
Yeah.
It really reminded me of the Blues Brothers.
Yeah,
you know, the band is still playing there, but they're halfway through to Chicago, to Central Bank.
Chicago. They end up running into Carrie Fisher. And Barrera's Carrie Fisher. And,
yeah, because he's got the machine gun.
He's got the machine gun. So they're
bastard.
On this. What, I don't know what they call it. This. What are they,
I love
this,
you, baby.
They get on a lifting gate like a mine car.
Yeah, they're on a lift.
They get in a mine car
and like a some kind of a big elevator lift, and they're going down.
Yeah, that was a
Alto's there, Cheryl's there, Ronk is there, and then as it's going like 30 miles an hour, they hear Barrera like calling out to Ronk.
As you do.
Yeah, and they stop, and then. Barrera says, come with me, Ronka, and Cheryl's like, no. Galia 4.
Well, she says, no, he's like basically just a puppet of Grace, and, you know, he wants, along with Grace, to cut your intestines out.
Intestines.
Yeah.
Intestines.
and put them into me, so
you
shouldn't go with
that,
him.
Why you keep saying it?
No.
Okay.
Was it on a
you
monitor?
Mean it's not weird?
Was it on a monitor somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on a monitor.
Yeah.
What, is it as bad as Shalom Apple?
It wasn't as...
It's almost as bad as Shalom Apple. Mm.
So, no.
All right, so, and then, you know, Cheryl says no, and there's a bit of a fight. I wouldn't even call it a fight.
No, Alto tries to shoot him.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Which is par for the course. Barrera gets up in his face, and it looks like it's all going to be over. Ozma turns up.
Can you imagine him winning that fight in that dress? He's still in the dress, for God's
sake. No, he wasn't in the dress. He was in...
Are you sure?
Like,
he was just
inner,
in like a...
Inner suit.
Yeah, inner suit.
Mm-hmm. So Ozma
turns like, he's wearing like bicycle shorts or something.
Yeah, but
he's wearing...
Yeah, you know, because before the lift came down, he took the dress off and he's wearing like black bicycle...
He's wearing the Uniqlo Heat Tech things underneath.
Yeah, exactly.
So Ozma's blocking bullets without closing his X gear, which is stupid.
Before that, they get in, him and Barrera go toe to toe. And, they're basically a match.
Yeah. They're a decent match.
And, but I couldn't tell, was Barrera flying?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was just basically, well, they showed earlier on, he could jump tall buildings in a single bed.
Oh, that's true.
So he was just jumping really high, I thought. And he had, you know, he's going in with a knife, then he pulled out a machine gun from nowhere. And
designed by Tengen.
Designed by Bayformers.
Machine gun?
Yeah. Tengen designed Zoro's machine gun.
And then, you know, it gets to the point where Ozma is covering, blocking Barrera's bullets. And then he shoots and...
Oh, wait, well, they set it up. First, that whole shot gets set up to where you know something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because Ranka, Zero, and Alto are running. There's a big explosion. The fight comes into their room as they're crossing this bridge.
And yeah, and this is a really exciting battle that is ruined by that by old music going bomb, 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 bomb.
And out of nowhere, both Mihail Clan and Luca come running out the side.
Yeah.
So you know, like, someone's going to die.
You know the concert's over.
Yeah. So, and then...
are they still in concert?
No.
magical girl changes.
Yeah.
Ozma, Brer still fighting. Brer throws him off to his side and destroys Ozma's gun. Because Ozma's gun blows up.
Yeah, he chucks a knife into it.
And Brer gets pissed and he's just like, fuck it, I'm just going to kill Cheryl, Alto, and Ranka. And then he goes to shoot at him and then Ozma just jetpacks into the way.
And doesn't block with his X gear. I can't get
it. Yeah, doesn't block with the wings of his X gear. Just takes the shot's head off.
Yeah. And then something goes boom.
Well, Ozma charges Barrera and there's a big explosion.
And it's basically the way that Michael died in the TV show.
The Diamond Crevice.
The door,
episode,
the wall of the ship gets blown off, or a hole gets blown out of it.
Except it's not Michael.
And out of the hole go Ozma and Cheryl.
And Ranka.
Well,
yeah.
At first, Ranka and Cheryl are both coming out. Cheryl grabs her mid-air when she realizes that Alto isn't going to be able to get to them. And she pushes Ranka back, which also pushes her out.
No, the way I remember it, like, it's like Ranka and Cheryl both go out and Alto just, like, you know, he has to decide which...
No. Okay, so after the explosion, the cabin opens, they blow a hole in the cabin, and Icun is the first one to fly out.
Yeah,
Icun's the first one to go off of Ronka's shoulder.
Yeah.
And then both Ranka and Cheryl fly upwards. Alto jumps towards them and can't get to him, and then... as both Ranka and Cheryl are flying towards the hole, Cheryl looks at Alto, cries, and a big tear goes and hits Alto. And then she pushes
Ranka towards him, which has the, you know, the side effect of pushing Cheryl out further out in space, and she gets the Michelle gun.
Cheryl's tear hitting Ranka's Alto's cheek. Was really well done. That's a good, very good storyboarded scene, I thought.
Except for the fact that with, you know, everything being sucked out of the airlock, the tear would not have gone towards...
She was crying really hard, man.
The tunnel's going to have a field day with that.
She was
It's like, when she cries, people would die because they're like machine gun bullets.
Should have been aiming for Brera.
Yeah.
So, Cheryl's sucked into space. She's dead.
And then you hear that? She's dead.
Ozma's dead. That was...
Cheryl's dead.
And most importantly, Icun is dead.
Brera's dead.
Two people died at the same.
Yeah.
Two major characters.
Well, there's an explosion. You know, Brera's a bad guy, so he's coming back. So.
Yeah. So then, Michelle... I'm going to say Mihail, which just sounds better.
Yeah.
So Go Mihail and Alto and Clan are on a shuttle going back to the quarter.
Yeah, they're getting back. Yeah, they're just going to take off.
Yeah, they take off. They head back to the quarter. Alto's really, you know, of course, upset. You know, Mihail comes up and he's like, "Yeah, you need to man up." And he goes to give him a bit of a bitch slap.
A bit of a Minmay slap.
And
but he blocks it.
Blocks it. Yes. Because he knows.
No one's ever blocked anything in Macross before. How dare you?
Yeah, I know.
He knows Kung Fu. And, you know.
He's manning up.
He's
slowly.
Manning up, slowly. And he's like, you know, I can be sad if I want, but I'm going to keep fighting or flying. Until the war's over. Because he won't say fighting. He says flying. And Mihail's like,
give me my wings.
Mihail's like, well, I can't...
My wings are goodbye, man.
He's like, yeah, I can't call you...
Farewell, sorry.
I can't call you princess anymore.
That was cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. So they get back to the... What happens then? They go back to the quarter.
Mm-hmm. And then there's in a the meantime,
the 25, the actual, the what do we call the ship? This F-25?
Oh, the frontier.
Okay.
Yeah, the battle frontier.
Well, the actual frontier itself warps. Like, well, it's controlling Vajra by this point. They've got.
Well, they call the Vajra.
Yeah.
And then they use these new. They look like Godzilla fucking ray machines.
They do.
I can't remember. Oh, Patrick Mason is here. You know what they're called.
didn't he just leave Tokyo?
Yeah, he was here.
Yeah.
Not that he ever replied to your PMs. Or
yeah, Patrick, bad. So they're controlling Vajra, and they work out where the Vajra homeworld is.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to warp there and control them. And
so basically,
Leon has taken over Grace's work in a way. And he's got the president in his pocket. They're like, you know, we're going to warp and finish this war. So they warp. They realize that Vajra are on an Earth-type planet. They realize they can control them. But for the individual Vajra, it's not enough to have these fold waves. They actually have to shoot them with a fold quartz missile.
Yeah.
And then they can control them directly.
It looks like a big syringe that goes
into them. It's like, how many of these things did they shoot? And how did they get so much fold crystal quartz or whatever? Like, it's kind of ridiculous. But
That part was really not done so well.
They're controlling them. They kind of, you know, they enter the atmosphere.
They're one ship against an entire planet of Vajra, and they outnumber. It's like they outnumber the Vajra.
But they've got Vajra on their side because they turn yellow when they're controlled.
Yeah, they got implants.
And they're also broadcasting this wave, which screws with them.
Yeah.
They enter the atmosphere. It's like,
and then they say, "Yes, it is our planet now." Yeah. And then. So it's just like episode 24, but with less detail.
Yeah.
Because there's the, for those of you that like the 171EX, it doesn't really exist in this movie. They're in the background for like, you know, old footage, but you never actually see one launch. Everyone's piloting just the standard version with the upgrade armor.
Right.
The white ones aren't in the movie, only in the background, so.
Right, but they arrive at this planet, they say we're going to take over, and then everyone dies.
Well, Barrera first of all turns up, shoots Leon and the president in the face. Head. Yeah, and then it turns out that the masterminds behind this, who were originally controlling Grace, they're in the head of the original queen, the queen that Barrera shot way earlier. The head of that's been retrieved for research. And the so-called guys behind all this are inside that head, controlling.
Do they need to carry it around everywhere?
Well, that was an experiment. They actually volunteered to go in there. It was that or the death sentence for them as well. Although it's never revealed who the hell they are.
Yeah.
And it takes over. They're like, no, it's our planet. It's our universe. They take control of the entire frontier, take it in the atmosphere. And basically the thing is, we want to get to the queen. Oh, sorry. The frontier's gone down. They take the battle frontier. And their idea is to get to the queen first, because the queen's kind of in a larvae kind of state, because they blew the head off one already. And the battle frontier is going to merge with the queen, become one big thing. And then they control the queen, then they control all the Vajra. They won't need their fold quartz anymore. So at this point, the quarter, the Macross quarter, turns up, and they get Ranka to do her singing thing, and it's not working. Because
No. Before that, Alto and Ronka have a little.
Oh, you're right. I'm skipping details. You can go into that.
And they send out an SOS.
Yes, the Wilder sends out an SOS, but that's revealed a little later on that he's done that. They mention it before. Because they get to the planet, they've sent the SOS, they didn't really mention it. Ranka does her singing thing. She has a moment with Alto, she does her singing thing. It's not working. It's not getting through the Vajra, who are directly being controlled by the evil Grace's back, the shadow enemy. Oh, I shouldn't say
shadow.
No.
Shadow?
Because it's kind of robotic-ish. Either way.
Children of the Shadow?
It could be.
As you can see, the ships are invisible to our monitors.
And there was
so what
three,
does that mean?
Three controlling the queen.
There were.
There's three.
All right.
Just like the
so when they realize that this isn't working... Wilder's like, right, obviously we have to get into the frontier, go into the atmosphere, get into the frontier, destroy these fold quartz wave broadcasters from Godzilla.
Yeah.
And to
and
do
you know
that,
what that means, kids.
And it's like, he's like, we would wait, but we've broadcasted for, we've sent SOS, we've gotten no reply. So how can we get down there? And Kathy, was it Kathy or the, no, it was Monica. She's like,
yeah,
look,
yeah,
we can fire the Macross cannon. It'll take out a huge corridor of the enemy ships. And you go straight shot, straight down the surface of the planet. But we'll burn up on re-entry. But that doesn't matter.
Because
Captain Wilder,
because
goes
Captain
out
Wilder.
You still forgot that Ron Cattell's out there.
That's because no one cares about that, except people on
the
anime
end.
Ski.
Okay, go for it. No, jump
in. Before all this crap, before the attack, Alto's going to get...
Oh, that... Jesus Christ.
Alto's going to go to a ship.
I actually got up and left at this point.
You did?
I was in the bathroom. I went to the bathroom because I knew what was coming.
Yeah, same deal.
Alto, I have something to say to you.
Alright, that's it.
Yeah, same
see you guys
usual. Same usual Macross stuff. Pilot goes into battle. Girl comes up after him. Something to tell you, but I can't tell you because then I won't be able to sing.
He gave her, said, here, here's a song I found on the surface of the planet. I want you to sing it.
So, she tells him she likes him.
It's the same as...
She says, Alto, I like you, but I love you, but I don't want you to reply to me now because I'll get all freaked out, I won't be able to sing. So, tell me later.
Tell me after I'm dead.
Yes.
Yeah. Promise me that you'll come back.
Yeah. And then Wilder pulls off, what was the move? Big Wednesday, which means that they turn into battleroid mode, drop the quarter onto an asteroid or a fragment of wrecked ship, and surf it through the atmosphere.
And
so
literally surfing.
The quarter surfing it. Like this.
So
that's
again,
the
more
Eureka
7,
Yeah. But and at one point, they're getting, you know...
But it's fun.
It's fun. It is a lot of fun.
It is.
Fun,
I like this one, yeah.
I mean,
the shark jumping that I hate and the shark jumping that I like. And this
is silliness that's cool enough to get over it.
Yeah.
And it
sharks
that makes a link with the surfing scene.
The surfing
scene, right.
Yeah.
Oh!
You're killing Tenjin.
Sorry, Tenjin.
But what I love about it is that on the way, this fragment of rock or ship or whatever they're using, it's their heat shield and it also protects them from all the shots being fired from the enemy fleet. At one point, it gets blown up,
the glass.
The bridge. The shield around the bridge gets completely screwed up by all these shots they're taking. And, you know, it blows part of the canopy off, and Kathy's like, oh my god! And then you realize that Captain Wilder, because up to now, Bobby's been steering.
Yeah.
And Captain Wilder's got the emergency Captain Harlock steering wheels going. I was like, what a good wave! And he's spinning it around, and of course, spinning the wheel in one direction makes the ship move in all types of directions.
And the ship is in robot mode, actually surfing at this point.
The surfing actually ends there
because it got blown up.
Yeah.
Well,
Bobby's the one making it surf, not Wilder.
Yeah, but either way,
Wilder was like one that made surfing.
Yeah, he was the one doing all the surfing.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder, you know, because I know he and Wilder go way back, but maybe there was a different triangle. Some point earlier on with Bobby and the captain and Isamu's father. There you go, done. Fanfic written, writes itself. So they crash land into the frontier, and
before that,
Alto goes on ahead.
We see that Ozma and
not yet, because
okay.
Then while that's going on,
they're dead.
No,
29.
While that's going on, Alto figures out that the Vajra are being controlled, and he turns around, and he pulls out his utility knife.
His Eva Unit.
His Eva Unit
Rambo
knife, and then cuts, and then frees the one Vajra, and then gets attacked by two other Vajra under control. And then he does the eternal Macross Zero fall, as he's just falling, and then it goes into this, then it goes into...
A flashback
when he first met Cheryl is when he was on Galaxy.
Mm.
You go ahead.
Right, so the whole thing is, and the moment I saw this scene, it was obvious. If it wasn't obvious already, this sealed the deal. It turns out that he had met Cheryl when he was young. because it's mentioned that he mentioned even in the TV series, I think. I know definitely in the first movie. She asked him if he'd ever been to the galaxy. And he said, yeah, once when I was really, really young. And she said, well, it's changed since then. So he was probably 8 years old or something, I'd say. And he was doing a stage performance. And she had just been taken in by Grace at that point. And, you know, she was completely freaked out by how much he looked like a woman and how realistic he was. And, you know, when he comes out, she gives him some flowers, and they're both, like, you know, 8 or 9 years old. And she's like, you know, I'm going to sing to the point where I shake the galaxy, and I'm going to surpass even you. And he looked really happy to hear that, which I don't know why, because if I was 8, 9 years old, and big on stage, and some brat came up and said that, Min may slap him, but with your fist.
No, she had a really annoying voice as well.
Yeah. And so you get this flashback. So then it's established that Alto met Cheryl first. He knew her even before Ranka. And that to me is like, alright, that's it. They've got the destiny, the connection from where they're young. The anime trope is there. That's it. There's no choice. The triangle is resolved at that point, as far as I'm concerned.
But she's dead
until the flashback ends.
Yeah. Because the flashback goes into Ozma waking Cheryl up and telling her how they survived their death. Because, as we said before, the first one to fly out was Aikun.
Yeah.
And then Ozma, and Cheryl goes out there. And Aikun, and in this flashback scene, Aikun goes straight to Cheryl and puts this, like, force field.
Transformers, yeah. Trailbreaker type.
Pinpoint barriers around her to keep her from.
He picked it up from Ranka's Magical Girl concert, obviously.
Yeah. So Aikun saves Cheryl, and because Ozma's just bleeding, not actually dying, takes her back, and he has the X-Gear suit on, and he flies them back into inside the, what is it, Island 1?
Yeah.
Yeah, they go back into Island 1. So.
Yeah.
And return to Macross Zero scene, because this is like 10 minutes after. Alto's still falling to the ground. Just like Shin was falling to the ground for like 10 minutes in the last episode.
I'm forgetting just the head of the head blown up. Oh my god! What should I do?
And what wakes him up? It's the flashback that wakes him up.
It's Cheryl's... Was it?
Oh, she starts singing.
She starts singing, but what I love is, you know, she says to Ozma... Oh, that's right. We haven't mentioned the fate of Grace, which comes up around this time.
Oh, yeah.
Ozma wakes Cheryl up, and then Grace's body pops up, all screwed up, kind of
out of the rubble.
The second time
from Ghost in the Shell, kind of thing. Yeah. And she pulls out a machine gun. Someone, I didn't get.
There was an X-Gear person behind Ozma.
And she shot them, but she copped a bullet.
Yeah.
But whatever happened, she was, because she'd been so wrecked up, she was freed from the mind control she'd been under the whole time. And she says to Cheryl, look, you know, here's your microphone. Grace has no clothes or anything on at this point. She's just pretty much a corpse. It's like, look, I've made sure the fold amp on the ship is working, the last of my energy, here's your microphone, sing. And Ozma's like, no, Cheryl, if you sing now, you're dead, because the V-type virus has spread so far. And she's like, I might die, but the song will never die. And she does this pose. I was like, that's going to be in Macross canon, in Macross lore,
yeah,
for good now.
Canon, seriously.
Macross lore, it's one of those scenes that's just going to be repeated over and over. And then she starts singing, Alto hears her, wakes up, and then realizes that Sharon Apple was coming out. No, wait, wrong. Macross. So he wakes up and takes her and Ozma back to the quarter, which is crashed on the front.
Yeah.
And Ranka's singing. By this point, they've blown up some of the frontier, some of these generators. Ranka's singing, Cheryl sings with her. They're singing together, so it's kind of starting to work. But the Vajra Queen has come back, merged with the Battle Galaxy. Battle Frontier, yeah. Pulls out the biggest Macross cannon you've ever seen. It shoots, but a whole bunch of baby Vajra come together to block the shot.
Yeah, which is from the TV show as well.
Yeah.
At this point, the SMS backup reserves arrive, like 7, 8, 9...
In all the colors of the rainbow.
And
there was a blue one.
And the
Superdimensional Fortresses.
The famous line.
And then you get...
What's the
line from Britai? from
Engel.
Yeah.
That was in it.
Yeah, that was in
maybe
it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't remember actually.
But これより香港は Engels.
Right. Okay, well,
right,
that's
right, right, right. Can you make that stand? Thank you. So that happens. Isamu gets his moment in the sun. And they enter the atmosphere and they're like, we're all going to fire at once at the Vajra Queen. Take it out in one shot. And just before they announce this, Alto, and I was about to say Isamu, the first time I saw this movie, after the Isamu cameo, I blanked out.
The movie ended.
The minute I heard it, yahoo! I grabbed his arm, yeah, which I only do when we're dating. So it was just unbelievably awesome. So Alto's said to Ranko and Cheryl, now that you're seeing and we've been cutting the control of the Vajra, I'm going to take your song to them because I have my wonderful manly fold quartz earrings. So I'm going to fly the YF-29 to the Queen and explain things as we do. So he's flying, and at this point, the reinforcement, superdimensional fortresses are all like, we're going to fire all at once. And Wilder's like, yeah, they've decided they're all firing in 1 minute's time. You know, it's not his call to make. And Kathy's like, you know, Alto, get the hell out of there. But, you know, he flies straight into the Vajra's hand.
No. Queen's Brera. You're forgetting so much.
As he's going there, yeah, he gets in a fight with Barrera. Who has
He's got an upgraded 27.
Yep.
Does he?
Yeah, it's got like a top cannon. Like the.
Does it?
Yeah.
Like the 20 tornado.
Like the, yeah. Tornado the tornado. It's got the top cannon. And he's got three ghosts.
He stole Luca's ghosts.
No, he's got the.
He's got red
galaxy
ghosts.
Yeah. The V9 or something like that. So he's got three ghosts to assist him.
And Alto proves he's middle as a pilot in this one scene. In my opinion, he takes out the ghost.
He takes out all three of the ghosts.
And it's a fast scene. Like, I'm looking forward to watching this on Blu-ray later on. It's almost too fast. I don't know where they can take scenes.
And then he has an epiphany and he figures out that Brera is under mind control. And he tries to convince Brera.
Yep.
Brera's not having it until he hears Ranka sing.
Yep. At which point, he pulls an implant out of his own head and crashes his plane into the control room.
Just like Macross Plus.
Yeah. And blows the crap out of the mysterious head with the three shadowy villains in it that were controlling everything.
Point blank range, what's that beam cannon he has? Is it just called beam cannon? So at point blank range, he shoots the three hive minds, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Takes himself up. Rare's dead. He's gone.
Oh, is he dying this one?
Yeah, he's
dead. Yeah, he's dead.
He caught an explosion.
Didn't save him. Bitch.
Then,
So that's therefore the Vajra Queen is no longer under their control. Alto flies into the huge Vajra Queen's hand, and
time slows.
Time
down.
He hits bullet time. Turns around. And can talk, of course, to Ranker and Cheryl.
Right,
like,
and this is the
kilometers away, but that's because he's got his magical manly earring. And he says,
but he can talk in bullet time as well?
Yeah, quite. Yeah. He says, look, Ranker, I'm sorry I couldn't answer you up to now, and I can't really return your feelings. And Ranker's all teary. He turns to Cheryl, he's like, Cheryl, this is probably too late now, but and then all the Macross cannons hit him. Or hit where he was, because it appears that the Vajra Queen pretty much folded out of there.
She's in mid-fold.
It's in mid-fold when
she's in, as the quarters all fire, they start going into fold, but they hit something, because there's a fucking huge explosion.
First one misses, and the second one hits something.
Yeah.
The first one's to the left of it.
And it's a big-ass explosion.
But that's a cop-out ending, because it's the same as Macross Zero.
The Eternal Fall.
Oh, hang on, wait for it. We haven't quite finished yet here, because he kind of disappears, and Shirley's in the middle of, yelling out to him, and she collapses. That's at the point where her health gives out, her body gives out. She collapses, and it's revealed later she doesn't get back up. She's in a coma from that point onwards. So, but unlike the Zero ending. In Zero, Shin didn't actually pick either. He wanted to save Sarah. He didn't really pick one or the other. In this, Alto turned around and said, Cheryl, I choose you, Pikachu.
Well, it wasn't even a proper trial.
Yeah, but he didn't, like, point the stick at Mal, so...
Yeah, but like, everyone knows you really want to point at the grandfather, so... Ugh. But, I know, I got the feeling this was a
he did point at the grandfather.
Yeah, he did. You're right.
I got the feeling this was much better resolved, because he did actively pick one lost, they just couldn't be together. So Cheryl's in a coma, Alto's disappeared, and it opens up again 1 month later with Ranker putting a paper airplane on the crashed YF-29, saying that she thinks, you know, Alto will come back once he's stopped hanging out with Shin, and probably the entire SDF-1. And that's...
Well, just the Mega Road.
Mega Road. And that's pretty much the end of it. You go to
the credits roll, credits, and they show little... scenes from the first movie and this movie.
And they show at the very end that because Ranka's singing the whole time.
Yeah.
And you see in a coma, Cheryl's lips kind of move and her earring. So she's communicating with Ranka via the earring still. But
do you think she's communicating with Ranka?
But well, Ranka show up at the end?
Her lips move. She's miming the words as
well. Oh, Ranka I left sings. Before the credits ended, so...
Yeah. No, that's during the credits. They're showing the little...
The box.
The little box. Yeah. The animation. Text, yeah.
I didn't know that
one. Yeah.
And at the epilogue, Alto comes back, all, you know, united with the Vajra. And
oh, you saw that comic strip, too.
No, I just imagined that from 00.
From 00, oh, man.
Yeah, so that was the big ending. I'm exhausted just talking.
Yeah, that's...
Well, it's 11, see you there.
Yeah.
So, alright, that's the spoilerific thing. So, gentlemen, good things, bad things. I mean, I've said the Alcatraz was a bit over the top for me. I could deal with the surfing. I personally enjoyed the music. As an overall album, the first soundtrack was probably stronger, but I love the Open Ranker song. I really like the Wings of Farewell song.
Yeah.
Which started off with this guitar riff at the end of the final battle. I mean...
not the beginning.
It started off and then gradually built up.
Is that the one that goes...
Yeah,
yeah,
that's it.
I think so.
You can't really tell?
I can't tell because I've had too much to drink and you haven't had it anywhere near enough to make that sound good. So, all right. I mean, I really like that song as well. There was always Love is a Dog Fight, the Ranker song, which she sang during her concert in the VF1. I enjoyed the music. I thought the animation was great. It was a bit of a roller coaster ride, really. I mean, I've seen it four times for a reason. Yeah. But impressions, come on. I've done my best to explain the goddamn movie. Yeah, come on, guys, you talk.
I've got to get going, so I'll just make it really quick. Well, actually, I've said pretty much everything I had to say. In the pre-spoiler section of this, because overall, I found it visually... very much an improvement over the TV show and the first movie, which had a quite high standard as well. Musically, I don't know. I think I prefer the first movie. I'm not feeling what you're feeling for the title track, but then
really?
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe if I see it again, and then. And overall, yeah, I think I might go back and see it again before it hits DVD and Blu-ray.
Right.
I'm not sure. It's a bit too soon to see it yet, I think, because I like to have a bit of time to...
Alright. Well, I mean, yeah, I saw it like three times over the weekend and once afterwards. Well, two and a half times.
Are you going to propose, or what's this?
No. Go ahead.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. A little bit better than the first movie, I think. Well, first movie was good, but because like there were a lot of surprises and the storyline was like almost completely different from the TV series.
Right.
And as I said before, the characters, like the character relations or character themselves, were very different. Like especially Grace, which I like very much. How she changed. She's like much more of a producer or a little bit more of a sister to Cheryl than the TV series. TV series, she was just a, you know, some person in cold blood, you know, like controlling Cheryl.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the last boss, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, she's not.
Yeah.
She just like turned back to herself and, you know, gave her the microphone and passed away. That was very good, and I'm going to see it like two or three times more again.
Go for it.
I really enjoyed it from 5 minutes after the start to finish. the opening is just too much.
It was Astro Boy that did it, right?
Yeah, the Astro Boy cameo and the Blackjack cameo was pretty awesome. But yeah, after that first concert scene and her coughing up blood, from that point on to the very end, was just a movie. It was like, like finally seeing an animated movie I can enjoy again in the theater. Visuals, was top notch. There's some 2D animation that's not so nice, but overall it's pretty good. And the things that I don't have anything that bothered me except for stuff that wasn't on there, like no Grace in a flight suit. So would have loved to have seen Grace in her flight suit again, and more Clan. Always want more, Die Clan scenes. Not enough of those.
Won't be cool.
There is a Die, there is a fake out Clan death scene.
There is in the final battle. Yeah,
in the final battle, she gets caught in the first Queen the Fortress.
When she fires her energy, her Macross cannon for the first time,
she gets caught in a blast, but Mihail saves her.
Yeah,
and.
There's one thing I'd
like to see her in a armored pack, like a TV.
No.
Yeah.
There's one thing I'd like to say before I leave, though, that I hinted at before. This is the Macross Frontier movie, okay?
Yeah.
And the other one was, I think they were kind of either treading water or just buying time for the actual production team to actually finish making this movie. I think, because there was just too much recycled footage, too little new footage, no new story at all in the first movie. I think Kamara is probably just thinking, all right, how to actually refresh this this plot? How to actually introduce a new way of telling this story? And for all the work that everyone did, visually, not just in terms of the writing, but visually and the sound and the music and everything, I think it takes 2 or 3 years to actually make a movie that is as action-packed and well done as this one. So, even though I don't like everything in it, it's definitely a better movie than the first one, because it is, I think, the movie that they wanted to make from the start.
Well, I know Karl Moore has gone on record saying he originally came up with two endings for the series. One people would like and one people probably wouldn't like. And I think he went with the crowd pleaser for the series. I think this was his original alternate ending.
Yeah.
And I think it works better.
For the record, the crowd pleaser is him flying towards Brera and saying, "You're the one," right?
Oh, God. Bobby chasing both in the fields.
He actually flew towards... If you look at the way that's edited... What's this? Is that...
Get some open rocket here.
Sweat. Oh, you got this from...
Mario 1.
Mario 1,
sorry. The open rocket cake.
You have to go take it up to the camera.
Well...
They had girls queuing up for these things.
Renato?
Yeah, you're one of them, man.
Let's plan episode 2.
This?
Yeah.
Okay.
Episode 2 will be...
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
Well, should we just wrap this up now, then?
Yeah, let's just wrap it up.
There's a lot of events we went to, which I've posted on the boards a bit, but look, let's make that a separate episode later on. So we're going to wrap up things now, guys. Thank you for listening. If you're still with us, this has been like 2 hours. We'll have this posted somewhere soon. Obviously, we already do if you're now listening to it, but thanks for listening. This is Macross Speaker Podcast. And I hope we'll be back soon.
See you next to Culture.
Hopefully with a better name.
Folding out.
待ちなさいよ。あと800円出せば私が手に入るのよ。どうしてもう一回やらないの。後悔したって知らないから。一人ぼっちにしないで。